This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Amy Dunphy. Now, in New York this week, Donald Trump sat down as the defendant. He is a former president, of course, and his marginal favorite to return to the White House after November's presidential election against Joe Biden. He's the first American president ever to face a criminal trial, and it is scheduled by the judge to start next Monday. But there is the matter of jury selection to be considered and established before the trial can begin. It's a bizarre backdrop to the presidential election. And we're joined now by Niall Stanage. Niall is associate editor of The Hill, a respected Washington newspaper, and he is also White House columnist for The Hill. Niall, thank you very much for joining us. This is a remarkable backdrop to a presidential election, and last time I saw it, they'd, I think, managed to seat 6 jurors. Mm-hmm. They will need 12 with 6 alternates. How is that progressing, and are they likely to start on time next Monday?
Well, perhaps not, because it's actually regressing just in the hour or so before I spoke with you. It's a bit like watching swings in the stock market, this process of jury selection. They went up from 6 to 7 at one point, but they've lost two jurors who had been seated have been dismissed this morning. One of them, a woman who said that on due consideration, she had decided that maybe she could not be impartial. So we're now back down to 5. Obviously, there are 12 jurors on a standard jury. But in this case, given that it's expected to last several weeks and there could be all sorts of things that might ultimately disqualify people who had been seated, the requirement is 12 jurors and 6 alternates. So we're still, as I speak to you, some distance away from that.
Yes, and I should say that we're recording Thursday evening Irish time, lunchtime, New York time. These charges are 34 counts of falsifying business records, and the underlying event is a $130,000 payment to an adult actress, Stormy Daniels, in the latter stages of the 2016 presidential election, when his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, revealed that these payments had been made. It was just at the time when he had made that appalling tape about how he regarded women because of his fame. It was a notorious tape, and he wanted to suppress the situation with Stormy Daniels. And in doing so, he enlisted the help of Michael Cohen. It's true to say, Niall, isn't it? Cohen did actually serve a prison sentence for his role in some of this and other things, I assume. But it's also true to say that one of the 34 counts is to do with attempting to interfere with the election in 2016 when he beat Hillary Clinton.
So Michael Cohen did ultimately plead guilty to a number of charges, including tax evasion. And as you rightly pointed out, some of the charges against Cohen weren't related to this matter. Now, the issue of the underlying election interference charge is actually quite a complicated one, which I will try to explain as simply as I can. Most of your listeners will know in the United States, there are two broad classifications of criminal offence, misdemeanour, which is the more minor, and felony, which is the more serious. Normally, the offence with which Trump is charged would be only a misdemeanour, unless prosecutors can claim that the falsification of business records was done in furtherance of another crime.
Yes.
Here, the prosecutors are arguing that that is what happened and that the ultimate aim was to keep information away from voters to which they were entitled, and therefore it was election interference. It is worth emphasizing, Eamon, in the spirit of fairness, that Trump has not been charged with election interference itself. And that's one of the reasons why even people who are broadly unsympathetic to Trump are a little bit skeptical of the prosecution's tactics in this particular case.
Yes, and Trump has been scathing of the judge's daughter in this case. He's facing a number of trials, four at least. He has spoken about people, lawyers, judges, in the most extraordinary way, setting them up, you could say, now for, you know, being damaged or worse. It's an incredible situation when he named this judge that's hearing this case. He named the judge and he called the judge's daughter a scumbag.
Yeah, I mean, it's extraordinary inflammatory language that he has used really for a very long time about prosecutors, judges, I mean, of course, political opponents as well, but people particularly within the legal system. In this particular case in New York, that has led to several things. An initial gag order, a gag order that was then expanded to cover family members of lawyers and the judge because of the attacks upon Lauren Marchand, who is the judge's daughter in this case. The other thing, I think, just to underline your point, Eamon, is that the media is under very strict instructions from the judge in this case to be careful how it reports things that could identify jurors. So there is very basic information that the media is permitted to report. And the names will not, of course, be released while the trial is ongoing. And the reason for that, in this particular case, is because of the fear of jury intimidation. And that's, you know, in itself quite an extraordinary situation. We'll end up with diplock courts or something the way this is going, but that's a whole other conversation.
And, of course, now that there are only five jurors and seven more to be selected and some alternate six. It may not start on time, but it will start. And he is obliged to be there 4 days a week, which will, of course, obviously interfere with his campaign. And he has been in the court this week following the jury selection process. And there are reports, which you wrote about, in fact, that he has been looking diminished, and Maggie Haberman, who is a highly respected New York Times journalist who wrote a very good biography of Trump and probably the journalist who knows him best, she pointed out that he looked tired, bags under his eyes, and at one stage looked as if he'd fallen asleep, which is ironic because one of the charges made against Joe Biden is that he's too old to be president and that he sometimes looks tired and makes mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think the Trump team were very happy about those reports that he appeared to be dozing off in the court on Monday. But as you say, I mean, Maggie Haberman's very well regarded by pretty much everybody in journalism here, including me. So if she was in the court and she thought that, I would imagine she's correct. The problem, aside from the sort of wounded pride on Trump's part, is, as you say, that he does like to project some image of sort of combative verve and energy. He is 77 years old, only 4 years younger than President Biden, and any element of showing his age could be difficult. I mentioned in the piece that you're alluding to, Eamon, that Trump himself has made a number of bizarre remarks recently, even by his standards. There's a rally at the weekend where he started talking about the Battle of Gettysburg during the American Civil War in a very peculiar, rather bizarre way. And that sort of had picked up a lot of attention here. So anything that suggests that Trump is showing the effects of age is bad for him politically and tends to draw sort of fury from him and his supporters.
Yes, and he had nicknamed Biden Sleepy Joe. Mm. So the Biden campaign will have a way of rebutting that, perhaps. More importantly, Niall, how long is the trial expected to last? And are we talking a fine here, or are we talking jail time?
Theoretically, we could be talking jail time, but it is unlikely in this case. The maximum sentence for the offence with which Trump is charged is 4 years imprisonment, but it would be unusual if a first-time defendant with no prior criminal record, which is the case in Trump's case, would be sentenced to a custodial sentence. So it's more likely to be fines. In terms of the timescale of the case, including jury selection, which is obviously happening this week, the prediction had been 6 to 8 weeks. If the jury selection happens quickly, then we would move toward the faster end of that scale. But, a lengthy enough trial and, of course, massive media attention on it for the duration.
Yes, and the whole world is looking at this election in November and the consequences should Donald Trump emerge as the next American president. And just to give our listeners a flavour of what we're talking about in terms of atmosphere, there is a woman, Carrie Lake, who's running for the Senate in Arizona. And I have in front of me a piece describing her behavior and a speech she made in Arizona, a campaign speech. And she is an avid Trump supporter. And she's talking about strapping on a Glock. Now, a Glock is a gun. And she said that's what she and others like her who support Trump are ready to do. Mm. And I quote her saying, "We need to send people to Washington, D.C., that the swamp, that is the establishment in Washington, does not want to be there." And I can think of a couple of people they don't want there. First on the list is Donald J. Trump. Second is me, Carrie Lake. It's extraordinary to hear a public representative running for high office urging followers to strap on a Glock, especially with the background of gun crime in the United States.
Yes, it is. It's another example of the kind of rhetoric that you would barely have heard in American politics 10 years ago, or if you did hear it, it would be confined to the very, very farthest fringes. Carrie Lake is someone who ran for governor of Arizona in 2022, and lost only very, very narrowly, and then decided she would mount a Senate campaign. She incidentally contends that the election was stolen from her when she ran for governor. And in my view, I mean, she is mentioned sometimes as a potential running mate for Trump. Now, I think that's unlikely just because she is seeking the Senate seat. If she was not, I think she would be certainly on his shortlist. She's a former TV anchor. She is actually, ironically enough, quite personable on a one-to-one level, even as she talks in these bizarre terms at rallies. But just to give people another flavor of the way this rhetoric is sometimes wrapped up in the rhetoric of the religious right, the big quote that you just read was preceded by the statement that we are going to put on the armor of God and yes, maybe strap on a Glock on the side of us just in case. So this idea that you're sort of doing the Lord's bidding while also arming yourself going into an election season is obviously extraordinarily dangerous and something that we see, you know, not just with Carrie Lake or Donald Trump for that matter, but we see, you know, increasingly entering into the rhetoric of American public life. Very alarming.
These people are very much absorbed by conspiracy theories. And in her speech, she said the following, I'm quoting, "They're going to do everything they can to disrupt the election, whether it's another pandemic, whether it's going to be inciting the civil war. And they held a raffle to raise funds for her campaign. And the prize was an AR-15 style rifle. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody knows about the problem with guns in the United States. That is an extraordinary thing to be happening around a Senate campaign.
It is. I mean, yes is the very simple answer to that. Carrie Lake, naturally enough, is a huge advocate of what she would term Second Amendment rights. In other words, the right to carry guns. It is an issue, of course, which marks the United States out from virtually every other developed country in the world. I mean, you know, it would just be unthinkable in Ireland or Britain or most other places in Western Europe to be having raffles for assault-style rifles at political rallies or suggesting that people should arm themselves for election campaigns. So, it is highly incendiary. It's highly dangerous. It's worth noting that there have been extremely serious instances of political violence here in recent years. Going back, goodness, about 10 years, Gabby Giffords, a Democratic congresswoman, was shot and suffered very serious brain injuries, although she survived, at an event. There have been others more recently, including from the other side, an attack on a Republican softball team and softball practice, in which Steve Scalise was injured. So to, in the middle of this sort of atmosphere, be engaging in that kind of rhetoric seems reckless, to say the very least.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Now, also in Washington, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mike Johnson, he unveiled the package that will provide military aid to Ukraine and Israel to replenish weapon systems and, in the case of Gaza, to provide humanitarian assistance. This is Joe Biden's package. It is being held up. What's the story with that? It's an enormous amount of money. I think the package in total comes to $95 billion, which is split between Ukraine and Israel. It's an extraordinary sum, but he can't get it through. Now, he is Speaker of the House of Representatives, but he is a crony of Donald Trump's, and Trump is believed to be controlling him. What's happening with that money, Niall, and what are the chances of Congress being able to pass a bill allowing it to be sent?
So essentially, there are about three different strands of this. Aid for Ukraine, aid for Israel, aid for Taiwan are the three main sort of foreign aid bits. And then there's also some humanitarian assistance for civilians in Gaza. Long story short, Johnson was unable to get the support to pass the whole thing as one piece because in the Republican Party, although there is ardent support for Israel, there is considerably more skepticism about Ukraine. Now he's going to try to do this thing where he will separate them all out, have separate votes on each of them, and then they will have to be wrapped together and the Senate will vote back again on the one overall aid package. The problem that Johnson faces is the hardliners on his right don't want to back aid for Ukraine. That means he will have to rely on Democratic votes to get that part through. And because the system is so polarized and hard-right Republicans are so antagonistic toward Democrats, the danger for Johnson is his position will be weakened by virtue of having to rely on Democratic votes. In saying all that, if he wants to get aid for Ukraine through, which it appears that he does in the end, he doesn't have much choice. There is, as I speak to you now, as you say, Thursday lunchtime, Washington time, the suggestion is that these things would be voted on Saturday evening, Washington time. But, the workings of Congress can be very arcane and complicated indeed. So I wouldn't be putting too much money on that timeline.
Yeah, just to point out as well that Marjorie Taylor Greene has threatened to pull the plug on his speakership. Mm-hmm. Marjorie Taylor Greene is a rather colourful, eccentric supporter of Donald Trump's. I think she was involved in the considerations that led to January 6th and that insurrection. And I won't use the words that Donald Trump might use, but she is, to say the least, eccentric. And, well I won't say the rest of it. You put it in...
Well, to give your listeners some flavor of Marjorie Taylor Greene, opposing this package as she does for aid to Ukraine, she has proposed an amendment, which has no chance, but let that go for a second. The amendment if it were considered, would hold that anybody who voted for aid to Ukraine would be mandatorily conscripted into the Ukrainian army. So that gives, I think, some sort of flavor of the eccentricity that Marjorie Taylor Greene is prone to engaging in. She also does have a history, particularly on social media prior to holding elected office, of all sorts of very dark theories, so one of which is sort of this bizarre anti-Semitic theory that wildfires were started by lasers from space controlled by a Jewish banking family. Other times where she appears to have indicated approval for the idea of assassinating Democrats.
That's Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Indeed, the Congresswoman from Georgia.
The Congresswoman from Georgia. Now, Niall, some interesting news in terms of campaign funding, and all of this legal business is costing Trump a lot of money, and his resources are believed by many to be depleted relative to Joe Biden, who has a big money advantage. Is that true? And it is said also that when you get to the later stages of this campaign, and we're near April 17th, it's not too long till November, money and the means of getting your message out there matters greatly.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. And it is true that the last official figures we have show Biden with a significant advantage over Trump in that respect. The latest official figures pertain up until the end of March, the end of last month. And at that point, Biden and the Democratic Party, centrally, had $192 million on hand, by comparison with Trump and the Republican Party, who had $93.1 million. So near enough $100 million advantage for Biden and the Democrats in that respect. Now, obviously, Trump will hope to ramp up his fundraising to a very avid extent, and he will hope to close that gap to some degree. But you're right, Eamon, the fact that he has sort of persuaded some affiliated committees to help pay his legal fees. Those legal fees are obviously vast, given the four criminal cases and other civil cases he faces. And so advantage Biden in that regard, at least for the moment.
And in general, I know that Biden has been damaged with certain people by his, quote, ironclad support for Israel, as he described it this week, despite all that we've learned about the way Israel is prosecuting their assault on the people of Gaza. That is still hurting him.
Yes, I think it is. I mean, I think that it is hurting him particularly with younger voters, more left-wing voters, and to a degree with black voters, all groups that tend to be more broadly sympathetic to the Palestinians than is the case with, let's say, the median American voter. So there are dangers of that cutting into Biden's support and cutting into enthusiasm for Biden. Enthusiasm is going to be a very important component in this November's election, Eamon,
yes,
because the country is, as I've said and we have discussed many times, so polarized that much will depend on your capacity to turn out your voters. The number of people who are truly persuadable in this country is diminishing all the time. The center ground has become very hollowed out, and that in turn then places a premium on getting your party's natural supporters or people who would be naturally inclined towards your party out to vote.
And what do the polls say as of now? Particularly, there's seven swing states that are vital to both candidates. What is the polling indicating in those states and in general?
In both cases, it's indicating a very slight advantage for Donald Trump. Nationally, his advantage has tightened very slightly in the last few weeks, but by a statistically almost insignificant margin. At the moment, he's up about 1% in the polling averages. Now, of course, you can get individual polls pointing one way or another. That advantage, if anything, tends to be slightly bigger in the swing states. And you're right, these seven states are really the ballgame as far as the election is concerned. In fact, President Biden was in one of them, Pennsylvania, during the week, trying to gin up support there. Because there are lots of states in this country that we can already forecast the result with almost 100% certainty.
Yes.
So therefore, that's why there's such vital importance for this small number of swing states.
Yes, and Pennsylvania, Scranton, Pennsylvania is Biden's home, isn't it?
That's where he grew up, yes. Exactly.
That's where he grew up. Just a final question, Niall, about the atmosphere that is producing the likes of Kerry Lake, and indeed that's allowing Donald Trump to do the things he's doing. His argument appears to be to his supporters that this is political persecution, I've done nothing wrong, these trials and all these legal things are set up. There are a couple of things I just want to clarify with you. Is that sticking with his supporters? And more importantly, if the election is close, are we going to revisit, do you think, what happened in 2020?
So in relation to his supporters and those claims of that the cases against him are election interference. That argument, I think, has been widely accepted by his supporters, and polling indicates that. They believe that these cases are illegitimate and are an attempt to hobble his election candidacy. On the election outcome front, I wish I had something more optimistic to say, but I would fear that if Trump were to lose a election that is in any way close, that we would be in very similar territory to where we were in 2020. There is no plausible reason in my mind to believe that he would accept such a defeat as being legitimate, especially given that he continues to falsely claim that the 2020 election was illegitimate. There's also a point that I should mention briefly, Eamon, which is that we're seeing some people around Trump already sort of lay the groundwork for that. Our old friend Steve Bannon, for example, talks about the need to, is it outvote the steal or something? I can't remember the Bannon catchphrase, but the argument is people need to show up to give Trump a margin of victory so large that it can't be fraudulently taken away. So that's rather bleakly where I think we're headed.
And it's only a marginal exaggeration, or is it, to speculate that if you were to win Donald Trump, there may be no more elections?
Well, you know, that is into the realm of speculation for sure, and he is 77 years old. But, I mean, certainly there, you know.
That has been mooted, has it not?
Yeah, I mean, that is the fear. I mean, the fear among liberals and Democrats is that he is fundamentally an autocrat, and that therefore, were he to get back into power again, there would be all sorts of dangerous consequences.
Okay, Niall, as always, it's fascinating to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. We're very grateful to Niall, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.